fairy tales can come true. It can happen to you. If you're young at heart, for it's hard you will find to be narrow of mind. If you're young at heart, you can go to extremes with impossible schemes. You can laugh when your dreams fall apart at the seams. And life becomes exciting with each passing day. And love is either in your heart or on its way. Don't you know that it's worth every treasure on earth to be young at heart? For as rich as you are, it's much better by far to be young at heart. And if you should survive to 105, look at all you'll derive just by being alive. Now here is the best part. You have a head start if you are amongst the very young at heart.
Hey, hey, listen up. It's time for Splice. Welcome to the third episode of Splice, Dominican's one and only radio variety science radio variety show. You just finished listening to Camarole by Lady Madonna, and if you couldn't tell by our introductory song, we are talking about aging in honor of a very special person's birthday today. I, of course, mean Roy of Siegfried and Roy from my hometown of Las Vegas. Not really, but my own special birthday is kind of a secret. So happy birthday if you're listening, and happy birthday to Roy of Siegfried and Roy if for any reason you're listening. If you are, if you ever feel like doing a plug for Splice, which is an amazing science radio show bringing science to the masses, feel free. Las Vegas native. All right. So, as I mentioned before, in honor of a very special birthday, I'm going to not continue our series on genetics, postpone that for another week. So, if you tune again next week, we'll head back there and talk a little bit more about the molecular mechanism of genetics. For now, we are going to talk about the genetic reason for aging, which isn't really well understood, but we'll talk about some of the more popular and the more interesting theories. We're going to talk about the social issues related to aging, especially in the United States and especially within our own healthcare system. We're going to, of course, discuss recent events in the news, both science and non-science related. And we're going to see if science can track down the fountain of youth and if there's anything you can do in your daily life to ward off old age. So stick around to Splice, and because of the birthday, it's going to come up a lot this episode, so prepare yourself. I'm very excited for this birthday. I have a birthday song. Enjoy, and we'll be right back with news about aging on Splice on radio.dominican.edu.
Once a year we celebrate with stupid hats and plastic plates the fact that you were able to make another trip around the sun. And the whole clan gathers round and gifts and laughter do abound. And we let out a joyful sound and sing that stupid song.
Happy birthday!
Now you're 1 year older.
Happy birthday!
Your life still isn't over.
Happy birthday!
You did not accomplish much, but you didn't die this year. I guess that's good enough.
So let's drink to your fading health and hope you don't remind yourself your chance of finding fame and wealth decrease with every year. Does it feel like you're doing laps and eating food and taking naps and hoping that someday perhaps your life will hold some cheer?
Happy birthday!
What have you done that matters?
Happy birthday!
You're starting to get fatter.
Happy birthday!
It's downhill from now on. Try not to remind yourself your best years are all gone.
If cryogenics were all free, then you could live like Walt Disney and live for all eternity inside a block of ice. But instead your time is set, this is the only life you get. And though it hasn't ended yet, sometimes you wish it might.
Happy birthday!
You wish you had more money.
Happy birthday!
Your life's so sad, it's funny.
how much more can you take? But your friends are hungry, so just cut the stupid cake.
Happy birthday, happy birthday, happy birthday.
All right, you're back with Splice on radio.dominican.edu. We're going to talk about aging today in honor of birthdays today and throughout the rest of the year. So I'll hope you stay tuned for the next hour on radio.dominican.edu. So aging is defined as the process of becoming older, which you might have already known. They are believed to have both genetically determined factors in aging as well as environmentally modulated factors. So it's generally estimated to be around 20 to 30% your genetics and 70 to 80% is your environmental factor, like nutrition, maybe if you smoke, how much you exercise, your mental abilities, things like that can be part of your environmentally modulated factors. And genetics, as we talked about a little bit last week, you're kind of born with, stuck with, and until generic therapies come through, which you should fund, write to your congresspeople, we're going to still have to wait to, you know, reprogram ourselves to make us all that we want our genetic potential to be. So aging affects physical states that can be the bone density, muscle tone, flexibility, things like that. It affects mental capabilities, so your ability to solve puzzles, think quickly, even reason to some extent. And it can also affect psychological processes. So it is believed that aging, whether just due to a natural accumulation of memories or due to a biological factor, actually changes the way you perceive the world. The first concept that's very important in aging is senescence. Senescence is a term that means basically aging for biologists. There are two types of senescence, which is important. Cellular senescence is the process by which normal diploid cells lose their ability to divide. So you might not think about your cells constantly dividing, but every day, all your epithelial cells on top of your skin keep replacing and replacing and replacing. And that gives you this nice protective layer and keeps all your gooey stuff inside. Thank you, cell division. As you get older, these cells start to lose that ability. And we'll talk about the reason why they do that a little bit later. The second type of senescence, which is important for biologists and you, since it happens on to your cells, is organism senescence. Organismal senescence is characterized by a declining ability to respond to stress, leading to increased homeostatic imbalances and increased risks to many diseases. So all of this translates to, one, homeostatic imbalances. Homeostatic imbalances means your ability of the body to regulate itself. So if you have proper homeostasis, your blood pH, your water levels, your glucose levels, which is the sugar content in your blood, and your body temperature are all regulated in a fairly well-defined series of boundaries, and it doesn't vary too much below or above. However, as you get older, your body's reaction time almost to changes within itself and to the environment slows. You also have an increased risk of many diseases. It's thought that maybe your immune system itself ages and thus cannot produce as many immune cells to fight infection. Also, there are factors that come from accumulation over time, such as cholesterol accumulation in your heart or blood clots and things like that, which can increase the rate of stroke. Lifespan of various animals can change greatly. The shortest lifespan of any mammal is 30 minutes to 1 day by the mayfly. However, this is one up by smaller organisms. Bacteria, for example, have about a 20-minute lifespan, though, to be fair, bacteria and mayflies have completely different life cycles and structures. So the mayfly, a complex insect, reproduces and has a lot more variation of tissues, actually has variation of tissues, period, compared to the single cell of bacteria, whose lifespan is almost completely defined by when it chooses to reproduce. So when it says it has a 20-minute of lifespan, it means that that bacteria replicates and splits into two from a mother cell in 20 minutes. The longest lifespan is also goes to bacteria, and it has been seen by bacterial endospores, which can last up to 40 million years. While endospores are not metabolically active as normal bacteria are, they are little capsules of DNA which can stand up to a lot of environmental stressors such as UV radiation or changes in pH or changes in temperature. And once again, they can live up to 40 million years. So clearly they can stand the test of time, proving that DNA is an incredibly stable structure. Also, that bacteria may actually rule the world. As far as complex animals go, there's a couple very famous old age animals, such as the tortoise, who on record, the oldest tortoise has lived 255 years, named Odwara in Aizu. There's also koi fish, who have been recorded to live up to 226 years, which kind of brings new meaning to your koi pond, perhaps, if it can span multiple centuries. There's also the oldest woman, who kind of sets the high limit of the range of human lifespans, and that was 122-year-old Jeanne Calment, who attributed her extremely long lifespan and fairly good health through it to olive oil, port wine, and a kilo of chocolate every week. She also smoked to the ripe old age of 112. She was a great French woman. And I think that might be a sign that the French have it right. If we move away from the animals into the plants, we see that lifespans increase incredibly. For example, there is a quaking aspen, which is estimated to be 80,000 years old. However, quaking aspens usually grow in tree colonies, which means that these trees might themselves not be 80,000 years old, but the colony might have started 80,000 years ago. The oldest single individual tree recorded is the Great Basin Bristle Cone Pine, which was recorded at over 4,862 years ago. So if you think about that and what that means in human history, that's before Jesus Christ, a little bit into prehistory, all the way to the ancient civilizations. So put that in perspective. That Great Basin Bristle Cone has been exposed to many, many changes in human culture. Interesting fact, if you look at crustaceans such as sea urchins, lobsters, and clams, these crustaceans do not appear to have an increased mortality with age, which means that they don't seem to age very much when they're protected from predators. Sea urchins have been estimated to live over 200 years. Clams have been shown to live over 200 years as well. And the oldest lobster living in captivity lived to the ripe old age of 140. So that leaves us with the question, is there a genetic reason why some species live longer than others, or is it just kind of a happenstance of different environments? Well, there's a belief that different organisms have different functioning telomeres. Telomeres are these little segments on the genome that go on the end of our chromosomes. So since we have linear chromosomes, unlike bacteria and other animals, unlike bacteria and other microbes, each replication of our genome causes a slight shortening of the DNA. This is due to the need for RNA priming sites, and at some point you can't fit another priming site in to replicate that DNA. So each time you go through, you have a shortening of the chromosome, which could eventually run into important genes that are actually needed to encode important proteins for us. If you want to hear more about that, tune in next week. I'll talk about the molecular mechanism of protein expression in more detail. Anyways, these telomeres are regions of replicate DNA sequences at the end of chromosomes. These DNA sequences can vary between animals, though most mammals have a similar one to each other. And these little segments at the end act as buffer zones during this process of replication. In case these run out, there is a protein known as telomerase, which works as an enzyme and adds these repeated sequences to the end of chromosomes to maintain this region. Telomerase is also prevalent in many different types of cancer. So there's a lot of debate about whether we can try telomerase replacement therapies for aging or whether this will lead to an increased rate of cancer, thus canceling out the benefits of having a larger buffer on your chromosome. Telomeres were first better defined after the discovery of the Hayflick limit. Discovered in 1961, Leonard Hayflick illustrated that a population of normal human fetal cells in cell culture can only divide between 40 and 60 times due to this telomere shortening. This means that if you take a cell from a new human being, a fetus, and grow it in cultures, that around 40 to 60 passages, so that's 40 to 60 replications of that cell, you'll reach senescence, which is the point at which that cell stops dividing. So you can think of this almost as aging outside of an organism, which means that somehow in our genes, there is a clear regulation of the amount of times a cell can divide, affecting our lifespans, as well as how long organs can function. Why would this occur? It doesn't seem natural to build in something that'll eventually lead to your destruction, especially when there's enzymes like telomerase, which might be able to prevent this genetic aspect of aging. Well, scientists didn't leave this question just hanging in the air. There are a couple theories of why this happens. There's the evolutionary theory of aging. This says that aging replaces worn out individuals with new ones, and that means that you have a new generation that can be more active, more fit, better adapted, and have a stronger reproductive ability than the old ones. Also, on that same strain, aging seems to decrease the lag time and adaptation to new environmental changes by constantly presenting new gene pools. So, by having a constantly adapting gene pool, you can better reflect the environment. So, for example, if you have a very, very, very long aging process or no aging process at all, a species of moths, say, might develop to have a nice white wing color to blend in with the snow. However, if they didn't age when the Industrial Revolution happened and there was a mutation for black wings, which better blended in with sooty covered trees and streets, these young individuals wouldn't have a chance to compete against the older individuals due to their already previously established development and dominance. However, these older individuals were not properly adapted to survive, thus decreasing the overall genetic and evolutionary competitiveness of the species. There's also talk that resources that are put into reproduction rather into individual maintenance and longevity increase the reproduction rates of those individuals, so that at a certain point you've put so much energy into reproducing rather than the maintenance of your own cells that you begin to age. This has been supported by the few experiments that actually moved the advancement to reproduction in fruit flies and significantly extended their lifespan. So there are a couple theories that if you never reach reproductive maturity, you never begin to age, though these are dubious and not completely well understood if true. There are a couple genes that are important in youth that are more selected for compared to genes that are useful later in life. So for example, muscle building might be more important in youth, but especially in social animals, after you build that muscle and establish your dominance, feeding your brain might be a better adaptation. So that means that certain genes might be turned on in your youth and later turned off, and that would fit into the evolutionary model of a genetic basis for aging. On an interesting note, some reptiles do not seem to age according to the fossil record and according to these reptilians that have survived for a long time, such as crocodiles. So these reptiles both reproduce and grow new teeth continually during life. So unlike mammals, where we only have two sets of teeth and then the females go through menopause and no longer produce eggs, reptiles like crocodiles reproduce and grow new teeth all throughout their life until death. There is another theory, apart from the genetic theory, that we didn't actually evolve to age. Aging is a product of accumulation of genetic errors. This can occur in a couple ways. First, you might accumulate waste in the cells due to genetic errors. So these genetic errors might lead to misshapen proteins. It could lead to poorly functioning organelles that produce harmful compounds. An especially important one is the mitochondria, which has been implicated in a couple different diseases, either for not being properly broken down once they are old, and these will produce hazardous chemicals within the cell, or for not functioning well to begin with. And in case you don't know, the mitochondria are the powerhouse of the cell. This is where the major chemical reactions go through, which produces energy from complex chemical bonds. So when you eat that yummy, yummy donut, it goes into your body, it becomes glucose, and the mitochondria, through a series of chemical reactions, gets a variation of the glucose, breaks it down further, and you end up with energy to function. Your mouth moving, your ears hearing, sending signals to your brain, things like that. Another idea of how genetics affect aging is the wear and tear, that aging is a result of accumulation of mutations and damage within the cell over time. This is kind of analogous to maybe an old shirt just gets thin and starts to fray around the edges, and at some point it's just not wearable. Besides the wear, there's also error. So not only does DNA degrade a little bit as you get older, but there are genetic mistakes that occur constantly over time and accumulate even with proofreading, and these mutations are not genetically inherited from your parents and usually lead to hazardous or non-beneficial things since they're only in one cell. So you can think of these as little mistakes that kind of go into your cells. And these can be caused by a couple environmental factors, especially UV radiation, which causes binding of two thymine amino acids in your DNA, which has to then get repaired. But every time you make a repair, there is a significant possibility of mistakes in that repair if it is repaired correctly. All right, so I'm going to play a quick song now that we've covered the possible explanations from in science for aging. Once again, aging is not really, really well understood, and you should approach any information you hear about the causes for aging with a bit of skepticism. We're not sure why aging occurs. We know for certain that it occurs within mammals. We're not sure why lifespans vary so greatly between different animals. And though we have many good theories and many great experiments to explore further, aging is a mystery. On that positive note, a brief musical interlude before we head into the harsh and interesting world of the news and reality outside science. So enjoy.
When I get older, losing my head, many years from now, will he still be sending me a Valentine? Birthday greetings, bottle of wine. If I've been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Welcome back. You're listening to Splice on radio.dominican.edu. It's Tertula, and we're at the bottom of the hour to bring you your news from the world and from the world of science. First interesting story today is that Greece has missed its bailout debt reduction target. It's up in the air whether the funds will still be released to this struggling nation and how the European Union will handle one of its nations falling into debt and perhaps financial collapse. Also, how the citizens will handle this. On the same dire financial strain, there have been protests in New York and spreading to other cities of, quote, disaffected 20-somethings upset with the state of the economy. They have been seen protesting across the Brooklyn Bridge as well as in front of Wall Street. This is called Occupy New York and has spread to Occupy Los Angeles and also Occupy Chicago. And there was a live video feed from Occupy Wall Street. I think it's kind of a good sign that we have all these overeducated, underemployed 20-somethings who are finally starting to get out on the move. And though not in our direction yet, at least not sitting silent, waiting for the world to change for them. While this is a very unorganized protest, it is believed, according to many academics sitting in their ivory towers, that it is due to the growing economic stress and especially the downfall of the middle class and the low employment rate for young graduates. So all you college students out there and all you college students here at Dominican, I wish you best of luck as you head out into the world and take a stand, even if that stand is dressing up like a zombie in a suit in your city of choice to say, I can't take it anymore. Stop the corporate zombies. Though I really feel like the corporations are not brainless. They are, in fact, evil. All right, so it's a dark, gloomy world out there because we don't know how to spend money or trade. And I'm not going to talk about it anymore. Back to science. So China just sent their first laboratory module into space as a setup towards ascending a full manned space station. Though smaller than the International Space Station, it is the first step for China into space. And I, for one, though it is not the United States or the West, couldn't be more excited to see what sort of new science and experiments get done out there and to maybe look a little further into space and see if we can't come up with some new evolutions in low gravity, as well as China and officials have declared that it's mostly to look at climate patterns. In other news, cantaloupe has been causing a listeria outbreak in the United States. So be careful if you go shopping for fresh, delicious cantaloupe. There has recently a report on NPR about the drug shortages in hospitals across the United States due to an increase in generic drugs. While this might not first make sense when you hear it, these drug shortages come out of name brand drugs shutting down their manufacturing processes and transferring the production of these major drugs to one or two factories. So when these factories fail to meet the very stringent drug manufacturing requirements, you suddenly have a huge void in the market for these drugs. This means that cancer patients, as well as IV supplements and things like that, aren't always available to patients, and doctors have to scramble to come up with new treatments or a new combination of drugs to try to accomplish the same thing, though it's very difficult as the human body is, of course, complex. So these drug shortages are becoming an increasing problem, not only in the United States, but abroad, as for-profit pharmaceutical companies start to shut down their doors to very, very popular drugs, but drugs that have had their patents expired and are no longer worth the investment to produce. Very interesting article, so you can look that up on npr.org. Search for drug shortages, and it'll pop up with a week-long series of stories. Final story before we get to my main scientific story of the day. Gamers have recently, at University of Washington, one-upped a 14-year project of scientists who are trying to figure out how to most accurately fold proteins. After many, many attempts to create computer programs to analyze these proteins and come up with the best structure, a computer programmer came up with the game Fold It. Fold It gives people a challenge to try to turn and twist this 3D puzzle into the most logical way. And lo and behold, in only a few days, the best structure for the protein yet came out of this game. Do you want to play? Try your hand at folding proteins? You can check it out at fold.it. So that's fold, F-O-L-D dot I-T. And that's out of the University of Washington. And all your folding will be accumulated into a result set. And people will look it over and go, interesting. You are clearly smarter than a computer. I think it's kind of inspiring after all the stories you hear about computers beating us at chess and Jeopardy and math and science, and that we are probably far behind our very own creations. So, in that note, we have won once and the folding protein front, at least for now. So, the main science news story of the day, which my Facebook has been lighting up with, and I guess if you're a science person, yours has too, was that the Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine for 2011 was just announced, divided into two sections between three scientists. The first section was received by Bruce A. Butler and Jules A. Hoffman for their discoveries concerning the activation of the innate immune system. This is the immune system that, though not well understood yet exactly how, responds to invaders. The other half of the prize was awarded to Ralph N. Steinman for his discovery of the dendritic cell and its role in adaptive immunity. So the dendritic cell is a white blood cell which seems to be able to attack foreign microbes and viruses, chew them up, and then take these bits of protein and membrane markers and then display them to other cells, dendritic cells in the body, and give those cells the ability to recognize this invader, thus explaining our immune system's response to things like vaccines. So congratulations to both of these all three of these amazing scientists and both parts of the prize. Congratulations, though, for another year of three old distinguished white men. So we've covered the news of the world a little bit. It's not very happy out there, very bleak. Lots of poor people, lots of rich people looking down upon the poor people, and not much happening about it. We've looked at science news, and we've talked a little bit about the molecular mechanism of aging due to telomeres and the role of telomerase and why on earth we would evolve to have aging to begin with. Now it's time for your call to action. What can you do to help prevent your own aging? Where is your fountain of youth? So, let's start with the genes. There is a specific sirtuin family of genes which have been shown to influence the lifespan of yeast and nematodes greatly. Activation or suppression of certain of these genes can extend lifespans from 30 to 80%. Though these genes in mammals, specifically mice, have been shown to have a smaller result. And it keeps smaller in further testing with rhesus monkeys and other more complex animals. There's also the DAF2 gene, which increases the nematode's lifespan by 30 to 50%. DAF2 is studied by Dr. Cynthia Kenyon at UCSF right across the bay. This regulates the reproductive development, aging resistance to oxidative stress, thermotolerance, and other strengths. I was lucky enough this summer to hear a presentation by one of the students working in Dr. Kenyon's lab through the Amgen Scholars Program talk about this as almost a Wolverine gene, which makes these nematodes stand up to an incredible amount of abuse that can't even be seen compared to endospores, those little things that live 40 million years. The DAF2 gene appears to have some effect on reproductive rates, which might explain why it was not selected for in the population. However, there's an idea that a human homolog to this gene, and a homolog is a gene that is similar between different species, the human homolog could be activated through genetic therapy and thus extend our lifespan and help us to live a more youthful, if less reproductively fertile, life. There's also theories that the fountain of youth might lie in environmental factors. These factors can include simple ones like protecting yourself from the sun or doing mental puzzles every day to make sure your brain is challenged. But there's also more extreme measures you can take, such as calorie restriction. Calorie restriction is the restriction of calories to an organism while these organisms still meet all nutritional needs. And this calorie restriction has been shown to slow aging and improve age-related health in animals and even some fungi significantly. This sort of age prevention has been studied in rhesus monkeys, and in fact is still studied because the monkeys are surviving so well. The rhesus monkeys on restricted diet show that at 20 years of age, the calorie-restricted monkeys are alive and have fewer age-related disorders like cancer, diabetes, and brain atrophy compared to their normal diet counterparts. So these monkeys are in generally better health. Further, the calorie-restricted monkeys have survived at 80% of their starting sample, while the normal diet are just at 50% of their starting. So more and in better health. Another type of diet people are trying to support the anti-aging effects is the Paleolithic diet. This diet is supposed to mirror the diet we evolved over many years with before civilization and the agricultural revolution. The diet consists of a wide variety of plants and animals, which can all be found wildly and have all been raised or lived in a manner similar to that they might in the wild. So none of the farmed cows or anything like that. The Paleolithic diet is also known as the caveman diet, and it tries to replicate even the cycles that a caveman or a Paleolithic man might have gone through, such as times of feasts and famine, also seasonal changes, such as winter might have more grains and nuts, and summer more fruits. This diet relies heavily on archaeology, and while it has shown mixed results to be effective in laboratory tests, many scientists say it is a fad rather than an effective aging preventer. However, the calorie-restricted diet is very much supported by scientific evidence, so you might want to fast and spare yourself gnawing on the raw rib bone marrow of a cow. Other hopes for anti-age therapy, leading back to the biological. First, there are ideas about developing a telomerase therapy, as mentioned before. So this would be an enzyme replacement therapy where telomerase is overexpressed, and this creates much longer telomeres at the end of your DNA. So you have a longer buffer zone, so the important stuff doesn't start to unravel until much later, if ever. However, there is, as I mentioned before, fears about the possible side effects from this. There are ideas of hormone therapies, which will change the gene expression within the body and make sure that youthful genes are turned on and aging genes are turned off. A very popular idea in science fiction and bioethics is clone body part replacement. This means taking your own cells and either making a complete individual or a new organ to replace things as they fail, and that way avoiding your cellular reproduction limit. So if you take fetal cells, store them away, and then take them out, grow a new organ, you might have a new, you know, couple 50, 60 divisions to live with that organ, and then you can just replace it again. This has been popularized in science fiction movies like The Island, and also a book and film very close to my heart. And by my heart, I mean my tear ducts. I cry so hard every time I read or see the movie version. And that is Never Let Me Go by Kazuo Ishiguro. He's an excellent writer. Definitely approaches the science fiction genre with a finesse, and I can't praise it highly enough. Though I would sit down on a kind of dark and rainy night like it might be tonight and read it. Therapies also include identifying and replacing mutated cells. This kind of relates back to the idea that aging is caused by an accumulation of mutations or wears in the cells by poorly functioning proteins. And these would go in, take out the mutated cells, and either allow your unmutated cells to replace those, or once again, like the body part replacement, except on a smaller scale, put new cells in. There's also fooling genes, quote unquote, which is its idea that you can switch on your young genes and turn off your old genes, not by hormone therapies, but or gene therapies, but rather by a specific diet and lifestyle. This is trying to control your epigenetics to a certain extent. Epigenetics are the genetic effects of the arrangement of DNA. So sections of DNA might be wrapped tighter or looser, and they could also be phosphorylated, making them more or less accessible to being expressed. And that's epigenetics. So it's not actually the sequence, but rather the arrangement that affects things. And the hope is that this is more easily changed than the actual genes themselves. There's a lot of social issues involved around aging. So not only do we have to consider if we'll ever have the power, but why we age in the first place and how that would affect our lives if we tried to overcome it. A major debate is whether aging is a disease or a natural part of the human condition. I know in a lot of families, people look at aging and death almost as if it is a sad and tragic happenstance rather than an actual fact of life that all people go through. Further, ethics are concerned about whether it is healthy to attempt to maintain the current generation for as long as possible. What would that do to the next generation? Will there be a next generation? And what does it mean about our own selfish desires to preserve ourselves? And further, what effect would this have on society if we did not have to have this concern about what was going to come after us, but only about how we can meet and extend our own lives and needs? Another question raised by we have extremely long or immortal lifespans is, will it overpopulate the world, especially if we remain reproductively active during all that time? We can also see a lot of social inequality in the lifespans throughout the world. For example, Monaco, a very wealthy principality, has an average lifespan of 89.73 years. Japan, another first world nation, has 82.6. Swaziland, on the other hand, has the low lifespan of 31.9 years. That's less than half the lifespan in Monaco. The US, if you're interested, has an average lifespan of 78.4 years. Other ethical questions revolve around aging, and our approach and philosophical perspective towards the nature of aging in humanity is euthanasia, whether it is good and ethically correct to assist an elderly person in ending their lives painlessly and quickly. This has become an ever-increasing question as our healthcare system is capable of extending life even longer, though not necessarily improving quality of life as it extends it. This can also increase the cost of end-of-life care, leaving families to make very tough decisions, but decisions that currently aren't talked about because they are believed to be an unethical choice, and at least in America, there is a fairly predominant idea that end-of-life care isn't appropriate, and rather the preservation of life at all costs, financial and effort and emotional, even to the person, should be taken to preserve their life as long as possible. I hope you enjoyed this show on aging. It piqued your interest and you're going to go look up more. A couple closing words from your host, Tertula. Don't fear aging. I think that a healthy and realistic approach to your lifespan will be much more comfort to you than the idea that you can trick your genes or change your worldview to keep you going even longer, though the world is beautiful and enjoyable, and it's nice to be alive. There is a poetic beauty in the fact that it does end, and in fact, the Greek gods were jealous of the immortal men for that fact that we only have a certain amount of time to spend on this earth, and that makes all our experiences more unique and beautiful. You've spent many of your beautiful and unique minutes listening to Splice on radio.dominican.edu, and for that I thank you. You can also listen to our podcast available online 24 hours after each show. Next week, I will have a new site up for you as well as some new programs to talk to you about. So be sure to tune in next week to see Splice new and improved with a website and a Facebook page and all sorts of fun goodies so you can get more Splice in your life. So join us next week. We will continue with another show on genetics, this time focusing on molecular processes and how those molecular processes translate into our unique characteristics. Stay tuned here on radio.dominican.edu for the Hotspot with DJ Juice, followed by the Power Hour with Sam IM, and then the 9 o'clock lounge with Too Mellow. Now, finally, in the new science tradition, we will end our show with Science is Real by They Might Be Giants, Words to Live By and to Think By, and then follow briefly with Adam Sandler's The Wedding Singer, a song about growing old with you. So thank you once again for listening and stay tuned. Science is Real. This is Splice. See you next week. Science is Real. With
Science is real. Science is real. Science is real.
I wanna make you smile whenever you're sad. Carry you around when your arthritis is bad. Oh.